Hello, and thank you for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
The golden age of America begins right now.
Donald Trump declares America's decline is over as he's sworn into office. A look at his priorities for a second term.
Regardless of your legal status, you have rights.
Meanwhile, Illinois Congress members react to President Trump's day one plans and what those plans could mean for Illinois.
If you know that you're walking on sacred ground, you have respect for that space.
And retracing Martin Luther King Jr.'s time in Chicago. First off tonight, Donald J. Trump was sworn in as the 47th president of the United States today. He's kicking off his second term with plans to sign dozens of executive orders ranging from increasing domestic energy production, ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and clamping down on border crossings.
All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came.
Here with more on Trump's plans are Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, a Democrat whose district includes Chicago's Northwest Side and Western Suburbs. On Zoom, Congressman Mike Quigley, a Democrat whose district includes Chicago's North Side and some Northwest Suburbs. And Congresswoman Lauren Underwood, a Democrat whose district includes some Southwest Suburbs. We also invited all the Republicans in Illinois' congressional delegation, but they either declined or have not responded to our requests. We thank the three of you for joining us. Representative Ramirez, I want to start with you, and we should mention that President Trump is speaking to a group of folks at the Capitol One Arena right now, where he is expected to sign some of those executive orders that we mentioned. But we've heard him promise, and you know, you and other local and state officials were canvassing in the community today with Know Your Rights immigration information. What were you hearing from people in the community today? What are their concerns?
I mean, I heard a lot of fear. There was a gentleman at the train station who said to me, I have papers, and then pulled out his employment authorization card to show me because he was fearful that if he didn't show me that and if I was ICE, he'd get deported. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of questions. Who does this apply to? Who will he deport? And so I think it's really important that we're letting people know, regardless of your legal status, you have rights, and here are the phone numbers you can be calling in case you need resources.
Have you heard anything, or what is the latest that you've heard about the reported raids that the Trump administration is expected to start in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, no, we have not heard anything clear indication of how many officers or when they're coming. Of course, we've read a number of things, but it also sounds like the border czar is rethinking and considering what he thinks is the priority for this week.
Representative Underwood, you attended the inaugural luncheon today. What was the mood in the room? What did you see and hear?
Well, I did attend the inauguration, the ceremony, and the luncheon. It was, you know, Brandis, it's a lot. It was a Trump occasion. And so MAGA was there. They were jubilant. And we saw the peaceful transfer of power, which is what our country stands for. It's what we've come to expect from inaugural ceremonies. And I was honored to be able to participate.
You're also the acting ranking member of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Homeland Security for the current Congress, the 119th Congress. Do you have any concerns for President Trump's spending plan on the border, especially based on what we've heard during today's ceremonies?
I think President Trump is going to quickly confront the reality that his very expensive plans for completely throwing out the activities along the southern border to detain hundreds of thousands of migrants, to, you know, immediately begin deportation flights, which the American taxpayers would be paying for, will run into some pretty significant budgetary realities, while he also wants to enact his tax cuts for the billionaires. So, you know, I think that the Trump administration and the Republicans in the House and Senate are going to have to all get on the same page. My responsibility is making sure that our nation remains safe and secure. My responsibility is making sure that families across Northern Illinois know that they have a strong champion and voice in Washington, D.C., and making sure that folks' civil rights and liberties are not restricted.
Congressman Quigley, you were also out in the community today doing some service in honor of King Day and speaking with constituents. What were some of your biggest concerns? What are some of your biggest concerns?
Well, obviously, what my colleagues have just talked about, and the fact that there's great uncertainty, and I think the fear is intended. They want to do this. It's almost a campaign of terror just by letting folks know the sort of Damocles is over them. But, you know, as troubling as that is, and it is, there are a lot of other issues that will be the issues of our generation and for future generations. Front page of the Tribune today talked about a record number of climate disasters in Illinois in 2024. The president basically announced a war on anything sustainable, a drill baby drill, movement away from EV vehicles, a movement away toward recognizing climate change as the issue for future generations. That's just one of the many issues that'll be extraordinarily difficult to fight back on in the next 4 years.
The president, he also laid out some of his concerns today, his biggest concerns that he says the country is currently facing.
We have a government that has given unlimited funding to the defense of foreign borders, but refuses to defend American borders or, more importantly, its own people.
Congresswoman Ramirez, what's your reaction to that statement?
Yeah. You know, as I was hearing Congressman Quigley talk about rolling back so much of environmental protections, all I kept thinking about was he has declared a war on the environment. So when I hear him talk about how we have spent money on other borders and not the American people, it's really difficult for me to hear him say that and know that the richest people in the world were at the front row of his swearing in, celebrating the billionaire, celebrating the creation of Billionaire's Bill of Rights. It feels great dissonance in this moment.
Congresswoman Underwood, during the inauguration, Trump also promised to fulfill Dr. King's dream for this country. We also heard Detroit Pastor Lorenzo Sewell quoted at length from Dr. King's historic I Have a Dream speech. What did you make of that messaging?
Well, before he said those things, he said it was Liberation Day. He said that we were going to reclaim the Panama Canal. He said that we were going to have the Gulf of America. You know, I saw Donald Trump make a lot of promises in order to distract the American people from his plan to reward the billionaires sitting in that front row next to his family members and make sure that those folks got a tax break at the expense of hardworking families across Northern Illinois. And so I do not have any kind of conviction that Donald Trump is inspired by Martin Luther King Jr. And I take him at his word when he makes these promises to harm families in our community.
So speaking of the billionaires, both of you have referenced, of course, you know, we saw folks like Jeff Bezos, as well as Mark Zuckerberg sitting in the audience there. Congressman Quigley, President Biden, he used his farewell address to the nation to deliver warnings that he believes are of an oligarchy of the ultra rich that are taking over the country. Do you see that taking shape, and how should Americans respond?
Well, look, we had a sample of it at the end of the last year. I mean, we had a bipartisan, bicameral bill to fund the government for the next several months that was agreed to by everyone. And suddenly the newly formed oligarch comes in and announces that it's dead and threatens Republicans with primaries if they support it. So I don't know if he's President Musk or just our most prominent of oligarchs. My friend Ms. Underwood talked about the tax bill. Let's just remember the last one grew the economy by about 1%, but cost us $2 trillion in debt and only benefited somewhere between 1% and 3%. The next proposal is going to try to do roughly the same thing, but it's going to go after Medicaid and Social Security to pay for it.
Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Obviously, the three of you have your work cut out for you there in D.C. Representatives Ramirez, Quigley, and Underwood, thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Up next, how a second Trump administration could impact Illinois.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
In his inaugural address today, President Donald Trump vowed to end the country's, quote, decline, put America first, and be a peacemaker. Joining us now to react on Trump's priorities and what it could mean for Illinois are Audra Wilson, president and CEO of the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, Ted Dabrowski, president of Wire Points. There's Ted. And on Zoom, we have Jacob Hubert, president of the Liberty Justice Center, and David Franklin, law professor at DePaul University and former Solicitor General of Illinois. They're both there, I promise you. So I want to start with you, David Franklin, please. How did you view today's inauguration?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Brandis. You know, I guess I would say the thing to do for me is just to step back and think about where we find ourselves today. You know, this is, to my mind, not a normal transition of power where we can focus on, you know, what people were wearing or what the, you know, weather was like. The fact is our fellow citizens have chosen through a democratic process to elect as president a convicted felon, an adjudicated sexual abuser, a man who has openly mused about terminating the Constitution, who encouraged his followers to violently disrupt the transition of power 4 years ago, and now says he wants to pardon those who did so. And I think, unlike in 2016, he now has a major political party, Foursquare, behind him that controls all three branches of government, and a more committed group of helpers around him. So while, of course, I accept the results of the election and I hope that there can be bipartisan progress, you know, on issues that matter, I do view this as a profoundly unsettling moment for our country, one that I hope we'll be able to, frankly, overcome in the years ahead.
Jacob Hubert, so Trump plans, and maybe in the process of signing some of his executive orders, but he plans to sign close to about 100 of them to undo progressive environmental policy, close the border to asylum seekers, abolish Title IX protections at schools, among some others. How many of these orders are likely to face legal challenge, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure there will be people on the other side challenging a lot of them. That's pretty typical nowadays. But he should be eliminating some things that should make some litigation go away, fortunately. For example, the Biden administration was going to illegally force companies to make climate disclosures to the SEC, of all things. And they did a moratorium on liquid natural gas exports with no legal authority whatsoever. And we have a lawsuit challenging that. So we're looking forward to seeing some of these lawsuits that we've had to bring against the Biden administration go away. Now, that's not to say that everything Trump does will necessarily be lawful, but I like that he's going to roll back those things. I like that he's going to take steps to protect free speech. I like that he's going to take steps to ensure that people are treated equally under the law. And you know, one thing I would say that's different about this inauguration is that, you know, he didn't pretend that everybody has always been on the same page. He does have a bold agenda. It is a break from the past. And in those ways that I've mentioned, I think it's a very positive break from the past. Though we will see, and I'm sure from my perspective as a libertarian type person, there will be some things to disagree with as well.
So I want to get to the folks in the room as well. Audra Wilson, you wrote an op-ed that was published in Salon.com today. You describe President Johnson's war on poverty as today's war on poor people. What are your concerns about President Trump's agenda?
Well, just as I said, it feels like a war on poor people. The fact is he has used his platform trying to basically pit white working class people against other people of color. Who are working class and struggling, has made them the enemies, has vilified them, when in actuality he's looking to cut many of the same supportive systems that white working class people have relied upon. And using race as this proxy to be able to separate people, working class people, people who are struggling, is really unconscionable. And so that's one of the biggest concerns that we have. And on the day that we're celebrating Dr. King, I mean, that contrast between the two could not be any more pronounced, especially because Dr. King had promoted a multiracial coalition of folks who were living at poverty or just above poverty to say, how do we coalesce and really demand the things of our government to protect those who are the most vulnerable?
Ted Dabrowski, you also published an article today on your site, Wire Points, where you welcome Trump's disruptions. What exactly in Illinois and Chicago needs to be disrupted?
Well, I think the border disruption he's going to create, of course, is a big deal for many of the Chicagoans who have felt left out. Talking about the black population in Chicago, they've been super upset that they feel secondary to the illegal immigrants. On energy costs, Biden's policies have been very strict, raising. We're seeing some major energy cost increases in Illinois. Those will be rolled back. And, of course, free speech is a huge thing. And I think, we've gotten so far away from free speech that I think now we can have open discussions again, and that whole cancel culture is being canceled, which is really good. But, I do say one thing, that regardless of whatever Trump disruptions he brings, I would argue that Illinois have a lot more things to disrupt themselves when it comes to crime, education, the tax rates. We have huge problems that Trump can't fix. We have to fix them. So that's a big deal.
Audrey, you did mention Martin Luther King Jr. Day. King's name, as we mentioned earlier, it did come up several times during today's ceremonies, including from President Trump. Here's a look.
Today is Martin Luther King Day, and his honor, this will be a great honor. But in his honor, we will strive together to make his dream a reality. We will make his dream come true.
Audra, what was your reaction to that?
I'm not quite sure what dream he's talking about. Because, interestingly, what Dr. King has spoken the most about, but yet it seems to not be talked about during these times of commemoration, was the structural nature of poverty. He was a huge, huge advocate for economic justice. And he basically at any point would talk about the economic inequity within this country and how it was unconscionable. Again, calling for that multiracial coalition, saying that we need to be coalescing around the fact that there are so many people in such a wealthy country living in poverty and how that needs to be stopped. So it's interesting to talk about his dream and his legacy about people living in harmony and racial harmony, but not ignoring the fact that he really talked about economic justice.
David, Trump has vowed to pardon individuals who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, 4 years ago. Not all of them, particular nonviolent offenses, commuting some of the other ones. He's keeping a promise that he made on the campaign trail. But what does that say about, the folks who broke the law that day? What's your reaction to that pardon?
Well, we'll have to see. It's my understanding that the Justice Department was fairly selective in terms of who they actually prosecuted. So I don't think there are a whole lot of nonviolent offenders who need pardons. Maybe he's talking about preemptive pardons or something like that. I think the symbolism and the reality of those pardons, if he follows through on it, is really unfortunate, right? We have folks who came to the citadel of our democracy with the express purpose of trying to disrupt the orderly transfer of power. And for several hours, they did it. And for those hours, Trump watched it from the White House and did nothing to stop it. So I think it sends a very bad signal about the health of our democracy that our president would be considering pardoning people who did that, and that he would openly promise to do it and still get elected. I guess that's all I would say about that.
Sure. At the same time, Jacob, President Biden pardoned a number of family members preemptively before he left office this morning. Are these actions the same?
No, they're not the same at all. This thing that President Biden did is weird, it's bizarre, and it's blatantly corrupt. And the preemptive pardoning of Anthony Fauci for anything he ever might have done is outrageous. There are many people in this country, people like Elon Musk, for example, who think Fauci should be held accountable for committing very serious crimes, crimes that may have resulted in widespread death. And the idea that you would just give him a blanket pardon because, well, maybe Trump would do something that you don't like, maybe Trump would prosecute him in a way outright you don't like, that's outrageous. If there are charges against Fauci that didn't have merit, well, that's for the courts to decide. So it's really offensive to the majority of Americans who voted for President Trump because they objected to the outrages and the tyranny of the COVID regime that Fauci would be left totally off the hook.
And we're just,
Biden's
sorry.
Family,
yeah. Sorry, Jacob. I want to get Ted in here because we've only got a few more seconds left. Many voters were attracted to Trump because of his promises to lower utility bills, among other economic promises. In about 20 seconds, what steps do you expect the president to take to make that happen?
Well, I actually want to comment, if I may, on Martin Luther King Day, because If you look at Illinois and Chicago, we have some of the most progressive equity-based policies in the country, and yet we have the highest poverty rate for blacks. We have kids that can't read at CPS. Very few minority kids can read at CPS. We've got the crime rate, nation's murder capital for 13 years in a row. He can't fix that. I wish we would, and I think on Martin Luther King Day, we should really think about what policies we have here in Illinois to fix that.
All right, and that is where we'll have to leave it. My thanks to all of you for joining us. Ardra Wilson, Ted Dabrowski, David Franklin, and Jacob Hubert. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Up next, a tour highlighting Dr. King's legacy in Chicago. As we've mentioned, today was also a holiday for many observing Martin Luther King Jr. Day. In the 1960s, the civil rights leader came to Chicago and lived in a North Lawndale apartment with his wife, Coretta Scott King, to draw attention to poor living conditions on the city's south and west sides. Our Joanna Hernandez joins a Chicago urban historian as he takes passengers on a tour of key locations where King made an impact.
What I like to say on all tours is that if something has a name, it has a history.
Sherman Dilla Thomas is an urban historian, taking people on tours and educating them about the city's rich history. This particular tour is all about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s deep connections to Chicago and what's happening in those communities today.
Dr. King based his base camp during the Chicago Freedom Campaign. Dr. King decided he struck up a friendship with Bishop Stone. Bishop Stone allowed him to preach here while he was here during that year.
And down South Hamlin Avenue in the North Lawndale community
is also the site where Dr. King lived.
By 1966, King had already made a name for himself. He had delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. When he came to Chicago in 1965, he had a mission for the city.
They offered to put him up in the Palmer House. He said no, because he wanted to live like people actually lived over here. So he picked a dilapidated apartment. That's day one. He ain't even get to let his drawers out of his suitcase yet. And all the kids are there to meet him, shake the man's hand. And when they're done, all the people are there to speak about what they're living through and the living conditions, right? Number one cause of death for black kids back in those days was fire and rat bites. Speaks directly to the absentee landlordism that was happening in these spaces.
King began speaking across Chicago and leading marches through Gage and Marquette Park, where marchers faced attacks from white counter demonstrators.
That's where King says that he's seen racism all across the South, but never like he saw it here. That's where he was hit in the head with a boulder.
These marches eventually led Mayor Richard Daley to sit down with King.
King gave Daley a demand list of about 16 demands he wanted to see change. And Daley said, you know what, you're right. I'm going to change all of this, but I can't change it with you living in the city because people will think I lost power. So why don't you go back down south, and as soon as you leave, we'll start changing stuff. They had a handshake agreement. And when King left, nothing changed. But that lesson he learned in Chicago taught him his most important lesson. Do not leave without the paperwork. So he went back to D.C. and he stayed until they passed the Fair Housing Act.
During the tour, Dilla also takes passengers to locations he says continues to uphold King's legacy. We stop at Douglas Park, where Dilla shares a story of a determined girl who sought to change the park's name in 2020. After she discovered it was named after Stephen Douglas, a U.S. senator from Illinois who owned over 150 slaves.
And then a little girl says, why in the hell am I coming to play in a park named after a person who doesn't respect my humanity? And they was like, damn, that's a good question. And so she partnered with an organization called It Takes a Village. And It Takes a Village was able to garner 300,000 signatures in order to get the name of Douglas Park changed. And so the city loved it because this was the easiest name change in the history of Chicago. We changed the name of Douglas Park to Douglas Park. We simply added an S at the end, and now it's named for Frederick and Anna Douglas, the black abolitionists. And that's sure enough an example of King's spirit being alive today.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
The tour was conducted in partnership with United Way of Metro Chicago. Dilla also offers other tours as well. You can visit our website to learn more. And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.